I'll take some notes. When you hear George Uhr and Cliff High talking about things that are going to happen in 2010 and in the next few years to come, you can use that information to your own benefit, to your own gain. So get ready. More with the WebBot technology on Coast to Coast AM. Gentlemen, tell me about halfpasthuman.com. Tell me about this site.
Well, that's basically where we announce and post our reports that are for sale. We've taken the output of the WebBot stuff here, and I write up reports that I try and keep under 60 or 70 pages. They're posted off there on a buy now button for $10 for anybody that cares to get into it. And some of the material within the reports I also post as articles, and especially if we can do graphics that will illustrate some of the more obtuse points around time.
What the heck is hyperchronism?
About maybe 2003, wasn't it, George? We started picking up on surreal.
Yeah, surreal and people not understanding what's going on around them. And
yeah, and so frozen. Probably around 2003, somewhere on this planet, we started seeing, I guess, an organized, if you will, or at least a very well-funded approach into the investigation of time. And they were probably doing these things called closed time-like loop constructs, which is this like little magnetic bubble. It is my theory that when they do that, they do it for, well, we know that they do it for a couple of different reasons. They create these bubbles to either screen out time stuff for the things inside the bubble or to concentrate time stuff. And if we look at it a particular way, what they're actually doing is they're creating a filter that screens out some of the ability of time to reach the interior of this bubble. So for instance, if they wanted to slow down a chemical reaction and watch it occur in real time, but extremely slow, they would put it in the middle of the bubble and then screen out the time stuff so that less time got into the bubble, and so the reaction went slower. Or, for instance, if they wanted to do away with radioactive waste, they could put it in the bubble and concentrate the time stuff, and the radioactive waste would decay to harmless real quick. You could also, for instance, theoretically stick a wounded individual in the time bubble and give them more time stuff, and they would heal quicker relative to the real time around them. Now, it's my supposition that from 2003 onward, some of these people were having success and that a strange effect occurred, that these bubbles actually create, let's imagine ourselves as pie dough. We're the excess pie dough that hangs out after a pie is made, and we're going to be made into this stuff in the United States they call cinnamon pie. And then you put this down on a sheet of, on a cookie sheet,
all right.
And then you put butter or oil on it, and then you sprinkle the cinnamon and sugar on it. Now, if we imagine the cinnamon sugar is the time stuff, what they're doing is two different approaches. They've got a little guy running around on the pie crust that's either got a funnel to concentrate the cinnamon and sugar into a spot, or he's got an umbrella to kind of shield it. Now, if he's got an umbrella, the extra cinnamon and sugar that he's shielding goes to the edge of the umbrella and it sort of falls off. Well, I think that's actually occurring in nature, and this extra time stuff that they've been screening out is falling off and affecting people. Does that sort of make sense?
I'm getting it.
Well, think of it this way. What if, and this is only a hypothetical, but since we kind of figured the breakthrough took place in some of these technologies in 1956, what if moving around of time stuff, either concentrating or watering down time, if you will, had something to do with the ability of UFOs to do unexplicable right turns, left turns, up downs without squishing its occupants? One of the ways you could do that would be by manipulating the time stuff inside or outside of that, right?
Correct.
Okay. And when you see or read reports of UFO activity, what is commonly associated with those besides missing time? So we're not saying necessarily that it's that way, but we're getting enough inputs from people who are having these
episodes.
Yeah, they're having these episodes.
All right, episodes.
And so whether or not that happens to be, you know, I don't know if it's a TR-3B or if it's a off-worldy, or if it's the breakaway civilization guys.
Or if it's just some guys in a lab dinking around with a technology they hope to use in a medical device.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have a shutdown super collider down here in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Shutdown. How many people does it take to start affecting what you do? 10 people? 100? 1,000? How many do you think you
need?
You
mean in terms of salting the data?
Yeah.
It would be really difficult because we don't really work at the data level. We work at an archetype level. So I would notice it, for instance, if someone, in fact, we've caught people trying to do similar things. I don't think they were aimed at us. With as little as 5 people in organized groups, I've caught a memering effort that I'm sure traces back to the Pentagon. I could find as little as 5 or 6 people using the same language set, trying to push the same agenda through the same spoken soundbite kind of things.
I see what you mean.
Okay, but usually what happens, if someone came on in and flooded the internet with a million particular kinds of images, right, we would filter them out because they would all be so consistent and so similar that we would know it's a data distortion and we're trying to get at the difference.
Okay, because if one person, let's say, did it a million times, you'd figure that out.
Oh, it wouldn't even get as far as me. I mean, I've got software that screens all that out. Bear in mind, we've got, at this point, nearly 400 executable programs that run. Some of the spiders are relatively huge with, 10, 20, 30,000 lines of filter code in C++.
You folks have been very, very accurate about great quakes. Big quakes like what happened in Chile. Haiti was a big one as well. You see many of them. Almost, what, 6, you say?
Correct. We still think there are 6 pending for the rest of this year, yes.
Jeez.
And on the big order, I mean, you know, technically the description of a great quake is an 8-0 for a geologist, but we kind of look at Haiti because of the huge loss of life as qualifying as a great quake. Linguistically, it's been a great quake because...
Yeah, we're looking at it from a human viewpoint, correct?
Yeah, and so from a headline standpoint, I mean, all the suffering is still going on. We've been just about every day I wake up and look at the USGS data and go, okay, where next?
Do you know exactly where when you say 6 more?
No, geography, you have to understand how the internet works for us. The way the spiders work, we're looking after a small delta or difference in numeric values relative to linguistic terms. And so the most often repeated terms on the internet outside of numbers are geographic references. So usually we throw those out. And we just make a little tick mark, you know, to the south, that kind of thing, if it's pertinent. So our geographic references, I wish I could do that. It would really aid things because then we'd be able to say likelihood of the quake is here. It's rare that we actually get anything that is even more than a banding. The best we've done, I think, George, you'd have to say would be like the banding for the Kashmir quake, right? The 30 degree latitude thing?
Actually, it was 34. And the real short story there, George, was I was out doing a design build move of a recording studio from Burbank over to Alhambra in 2005. And I'd been looking at the data from Cliff throughout 2005, and it kept coming back to 34 north, big earthquake. Well, I don't know if you realize that Burbank is 34 north, and it's, you know, seismically not the place you want to be in a big earthquake.
That's true.
So I blew out of Southern California on March 2nd, got back to the ranch, and Elaine and I are watching TV here, and October 8th, along comes the smackdown 76,000, I think it was, dead in the Kashmir quake. And I'm going, oh, well, at least it wasn't our 34 north, but, I mean, still a horrific thing to now, I won't say know it in advance, but Cliff, to a larger degree than me, goes into these, you know, fugues, funks, because it's like having to live the bad news twice.
Well, you know, a lot of people I know are talking about a big one in Southern California. And they feel it. Geologists feel it. And they just sense that something's going to happen.
And that's what we pick up. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The problem is, if we get an 8-0 there, then there's this whole other terrible thing that starts coming into play, which Cliff and I have gamed out on the phone. What happens if the Pacific Plate is breaking, and we had, remember that up on one end of the plate, we've got the southern islands of Japan. You come straight line, great circle down through the Hawaiian Islands, and you end up where? Northern Chile. And the other way, you go basically from Victoria, British Columbia, down great circle through Hawaii, and you end up down in Suva, Fiji, where guess what's active now? So those are the kinds of things that, you know, I won't say we lose sleep over, but it doesn't give us any comfort as humans, because how do you prepare for something like that?
And we have to acknowledge that the data itself suggests that that's one of the outcomes of these series of quakes that will occur over 2010 and maybe into early 2011. The thing we that has us concerned is very similar to what happened in the Banda Aceh quake. There used to be two plates, or a single plate there, the Indo-Australian plate, and it cracked diagonally and caused the tsunami, and it cracked into the Indo plate and now the Australian plate.
And our problem with that particular prediction was we forecast, land driven back to a previous age,
300,000, yeah.
Yeah, 300,000 dead. That came out in an ALTA report August, middle of August, late August, and we thought that the Redwood City quake down in...
No, the report actually came out much earlier than that, March or so, but correct, the events happened in...
The events happened, the Redwood City quake during the Lacey Peterson trial. Emptied out the courthouse, met a lot of stuff, and we're going, oh, well, there weren't really 300,000 people dead. Then along comes the Boxing Day quake, and guess what?
Yeah, so our problem is that we have an effect called bleed-through. Bearing in mind that we're sort of inventing this as we go along, there are certain patterns we notice within our own work that we try and harmonize with, at least note whether they're interfering or helping. And so George Ure has come up with a Ure postulate, which is based on how far out we see the data is going to be, how large its emotional impact or its ability to move society, and he's been accurate on that one. Then there's this filtering sort of an effect that he's talking about here as well, this... you can't see, we get something that says quake, maybe even two quakes, but we can't really tell it's going to be two quakes, so we lump all of the data under a single quake. It's actually describing two quakes. When the early little one comes along, we think, oh, we blew the whole thing. We only got this amount of linguistics. Boy, were we wrong. And then a few months later, the bigger one shows up. We've got that kind of thing with the Pacific plate cracking.
We also have that happening, George, with death of the U.S. dollar, which has been associated with November's now for, what, 6-7 years, Cliff?
Yeah.
And the problem is the more lead time we get, the more number of years that it prints through early, then the bigger the event is when it gets here. And we've had it in the data now long enough so that we could have Cliff may not agree, but, you know, that's among gentlemen. My bet's on collapse of the dollar really does take place in November, and that takes down globalism, and that sets off the whole intermittent grid, the intermittent telecom systems and all that.
And that would also feed into this, the alien wars meme and all the other stuff that we saw that was all really weird relative to the shadow government.
Exactly.
So George could be quite correct. It could be that our four-day occurrence in there from the 8th through the 11th inclusive won't be any kind of a war, but it will be the huge emotional release that's associated with the death of a currency. Now, there is something to suggest that he's correct even more than what we've got, and that is that we knew we would come up with some pre-echoes in early March that would suggest what would occur relative to a specific hotspot in late July or August, that, again, it was an echo to what would occur in November. And the early pre-echoes we got were all currency-related. Greece did some stuff with their currency. We've had some currency moves here, et cetera. So, indeed, it may be that in November, the dollar goes bluey.
But not only that, but when the dollar goes bluey, then globalism falls apart. And I don't know if you've thought through, you know, George, how ugly that gets to be.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you see civil unrest here on the horizon?
Oh, that comes before.
Yeah, that's a precursor.
Yeah,
I mean,
all right, that's
that
a prequel.
Way, but, from July 8th onward, well, actually, we're in the okay, let me go all the way back to, what was it, early part of 2009, we said that the revolution meme would go active in the end of the first quarter in 2010. And I think everybody would agree that the revolution meme in the United States has gone active in the sense of a number of events have occurred relative to that. And we were accurate in that. At the same time that we got that, those linguistics in the early part of 2009 about revolution meme going active, we also got a big emotional sweep for the revolution meme going very hot in July of 2010. Now that we're closer to it, we can see a little bit more clarity with what's going on.
And what would drive that, George, might be something like food prices skyrocketing because of terrible weather, unable to plant crops.
Or because of the planned devaluation of the dollar. Let's bear in mind coast-to-coast guest last night, which is Mr. Williams, and the idea that the Illuminati are indeed slashing the purchasing power of the dollar in order to maintain certain things going at the moment.
Which would concentrate the purchasing power in the hands of the people that bought up the gold and silver.
Right.
And we do know that certain British heads of state managed to sell gold when it was down under $300.
And we also know recently we've hit the juxtaposition of two twin data sets that are very important within our data work, and that is not only the currency issues that came out as a pre-echo, but at the same time that that occurred, up pops this huge scandal relative to how silver has been artificially inflated hundreds of times by paper silver. And guess what? The whistleblower response that we've been waiting for also occurred when the person who blew the whistle on the silver scandal was nearly suicided by another driver in an accident. Let's call it an accident.
And I don't know if you know this, George, but my commodity broker called me up several months back and said, "Hey, George, do you realize that the gold and silver ETFs have fine print that they can give you the equivalent amount of paper? There is no gold deliverable." And I said, "What?" So you got to read the fine print.
Well, sure, that's their way out.
Of course.
I am concerned about this unrest because it could filter. Now, did you pick up the tea parties or the tense feeling over this healthcare program?
Yes, indeed. And we actually caught it in a couple of different ways. The first thing about the health was the obvious connection to Obama. We had picked up as early as early 2009 to mid 2009, we'd picked up this issue about the Obama and the potential for his health through this particular period of time. And it wasn't his health. Now it turns out it was this focus on the health care. So when we had misinterpreted it as a potential for assassination simply because of the huge amount of emotionalism around it, turns out to be the health care issue here. The Tea Party thing was actually also involved in the context change that came through this past December, and that's this hardening of the attitude and the, if you will, the broadening or widening of the, if you want to call it the Tea Party. I'm reluctant to use labels that I see bandied about on the media because I don't want to reinforce what the propagandists are trying to do. But so I call it a revolution meme or a rebellion meme because it's broad and it's not merely Tea Party as we are seeing it branded.
And it's not necessarily anti-government, although arguably there are agent provocateur potentials in that regard. But it's really the American consumer is in a rebellious mode, looking for quality, asking, and we come full circle back to the question of what does capitalism do once we've built everything?
That's a good point. Well, stay with us, you two. We're going to come back with some more, then we'll take phone calls next hour as well as we talk about web-bot technology. And there's much more to talk about when we come back, including what are the possibilities of another depression. I want you to be ready for this. That's the important thing. Just take notes and prepare. That's the bottom line. We'll be back. Well, about 8 feet under, below the earth, as a matter of fact. George Ure, Cliff High, our special guest. We'll take phone calls with them next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, if you're not part of the Streamlink family, for just pennies a day, you can be. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and read all about Streamlink. We'll be right back. And welcome back with George Ure, Cliff High, and of course, we'll take your phone calls next hour. This second depression, this bubble that you see on the horizon, how do we know how big it can get?
We only have to look at Greece and their instant response to what they're facing at the from their version of the powers that be. They've had a currency crisis. Their currency crisis is shielded to a certain extent by their participation in the euro, but it is such an order of magnitude that the first thing they did, as we forecast, was to turn to the idea of taxing a huge part of their population that's always gotten away with never paying taxes, churches. That's how bad it's going to be. In the United States, probably sometime after July, before November, in that period of time, you'll see a move to start taxing churches both on property and income because of the government will be so desperate for funds.
And you see this in other areas too, George. For example, the Obama health care plan. I have maintained for a long time that it has always been about creating wealth, creating jobs in healthcare, and it hasn't really been about solving the problems of healthcare delivery. Just one example. It's very possible, and in fact, in many remote areas, healthcare is delivered effectively using telecommunications equipment. There's no reason why telemedicine could not be a boom industry right now with USB ECGs and all kinds of other peripherals that are just waiting to be developed. There's an open ECG project going on in Eastern Europe, for example, that's adapting ECGs to iPhones. And so these are some very exciting events, but the reason that we don't have effective telemedicine is there's not money in it for the big guys. And that's what it's all about. It's about maintaining the status quo. And then,
well, wait a second, George. I mean, let's be real clear about that. I think we've slipped. And I think that the powers that be are aware of this. From my viewpoint, within the data, they know it's no longer about doing business as usual. It is about hardening up. What was the term that Biden used? Girding your loins?
Girding the loins, that's right. And that's why we're seeing things like the militia raid up in Michigan. And coincidentally, we've got language later in the year suggesting the draft in a major way, a surprising, shocking way.
That would be a surprise and a shock. If there's going to be a draft and it pops up unexpectedly, that means there's something else on the horizon that would need these military folks, right?
Well, but you could also look at it another way. It may be yet another mechanism for control. They may decide, you know, look, buried within the healthcare deal is a takeover of the student loan administration. So the government is now in charge of the student loan. So if you get out of line, and who's more likely to get out of line than a student and rioting and so forth, well, they'll cut you off. So they've got you there. And as many people as they can get that are not students to join the military, even if they have to draft them, is yet another mechanism of control and so on. So it might be a response to that. We do see a lot of language about it, not necessarily success, though.
And remember that putting people to work in a massive scale was what the Works Progress Administration, the Civilian Conservation Corps, even to an extent the rural electrification programs of the late 30s, those were all designed to make people work and get the economy rolling again.
There could be that kind of draft, yes. But if so, again, it'll be shocking in its order of magnitude. And it'll also betray just how deep the depression really is.
You know, if picture, George, if you woke up, let's say we go through a summer and there's periodic demonstrations of a violent nature in the country, people are going hungry, crops have failed, there's not going to be enough calories, there's not going to be enough food, the stock market is declining, and then in November it...
Relative energy prices are escalating seriously.
Whole thing is hitting the fan at that point. Commercial real estate is shuddering.
Mass layoffs, by the way.
Oh, yeah, mass layoffs are back.
You mean more so than what we've got now?
Oh, sure.
Bankruptcies pending are the big thing with our markets entity this time was all about the derivatives and how the derivatives bubble is finally giving way. And, well, of course, there goes Greece. But we have yet to see the guts of the derivatives bubble expelled from the U.S. economy. And when it does, the horror of that will shock generations.
And so you ask, you know, what's the second depression going to be like? In the first depression, people ran to the cities thinking they could find jobs and a way to make a living. In this depression, what's likely to happen is people will likely do just the opposite.
Run out of the cities, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they know jobs are never coming around in their particular, or in their ability to get them, and they need to look at an alternative way to survive.
And if you look at education, I mean, with the exception of medicine, take computer programming. That was a really hot field for a while. But nowadays, when a competent programmer wants something, like, Cliff, you need something in a C++ library, download it, dude.
Yeah, we've pretty much populated all of that. Again, it's a growth model that's been completed.
If you're financeable, is it a good time to buy a house?
No.
All right, so still stay on the sidelines on that.
Yeah, if you're worried about the house as an investment, if you need a place to live, certainly, by all means, go ahead and do it, because money is going to be losing its value.
And you may get a good deal, right?
Well, there's that, but then there's also the potential for, if I were going to buy a house, I'd be real smart if I had cash, okay? That means that I would have some kind of disposable money and not really getting into financing so much. And say that you had to have a big down payment. I would take half my down payment and I'd buy silver. Then I would take the other half and use it as the down payment. And when the silver explodes in the hyperinflationary period later on, you pay the whole house off.
What do you two see looming as the most pressing immediate problem for us?
Oh, boy. I would say short term, meaning up until end of summer, probably the running out of food part.
Well,
really?
No.
Okay.
No, the most immediate impact in terms of emotion, I mean, George is correct. From summer on, it'll be a real issue. But up into and through summer will be the fallout from the current economic woes that will be expressed in a number of ways, but all those emotions will start being acted out on after we get to July. And prior to that, it'll be a lot of building tension. So the kind of thing you see now with the Tea Party guys gathering and grumbling and so on, that's building tension. After July, we're going to get into release expressions. So if you're going to see civil unrest, it'll begin July 8th and onward.
Well, and then when it happens, look out.
Yeah, because hungry people are not nice to deal with.
No.
And if you've been unemployed for a year and your unemployment is now barely adequate to keep up with the hyperinflation, well, there you go.
Or if you're what's left of the middle class and you're already paying for a new medical system and you don't see any real benefit from it yet, and yet at the same time government employees are still getting raises, government is still expanding.
And you hear about $25 billion worth of bonuses for hedge fund managers just at the time that your kids are straggling home any way they can because their college is closed? And yet they still have $80,000 worth of debt for an education in a field they'll never be able to get compensated for.
Oh, did I mention your credit card has just been bumped up to 27%?
27, George, you're talking that? No, that's been dropped down from 40.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. But that's part of the federal subsidy to the banks, dude.
Right.
And they've lowered your line of credit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, now the food supply is starting to dry up on various different items, and you're having to pay, $5 a tomato for anything imported in the United States because energy costs are going up, and those people are now selling to people with real money like euros.
And you see this all happening
in 2010. We were
in 2010. It's happening now.
Correct. Yeah. We're in that initial
wave of it.
Part of it. I'm sorry?
Jeez. We're in the foreplay part right now.
Correct. We're in what we call the stacking level, where all of the problems are going to stack up on top of each other until July 8th, and then there's going to be a whole lot of release language in these little sawtooth patterns that'll keep us going until the tipping point. And after that, it's like, boy, we're really into it. Now, the good part of that is that after March of 2011, there does appear to be a settling down in the U.S. from a rebellion or revolution into a reformation wave. So I would have to say that there's more positives that will exist after March of 2011 for the United States than exist today relative to the emotional values within our data. However, those positives themselves will be a serious challenge because we have to reform everything.
What happens from an economic standpoint, George, is there are several very good books on it. There's one by Jack Lessinger, who is a retired professor emeritus of business history up at the University of Washington. And what he sees coming down the road long term will be a benign form of capitalism, a business model which will be flexible and will be able to deal with some shrinkage as well as some growth. and will shun the excesses and the dead ends of the model that got us to this place. But that doesn't even really start emerging until 2017, 2020 or so.
And that would presume, of course, now bear in mind, that his book is written with the idea that conditions outside of the narrow area he's examining stay the same as at the time that he wrote the book.
Yeah,
so
right,
if Earth
right.
changes occur and we have a giant plate crack or huge amounts of volcanism that shut down air travel over the North Pole, well, conditions are changing all the time relative to that.
And we're only one glacier slide away from that.
Correct.
That is true. What do you see around 2012? What did the Mayans see, and what do you see?
Well, there's a couple of different issues. The data per se is from the WebBot viewpoint, is non-committal. It just shows the data gap, as though if you wanted to interpret it that way, one way to look at it would be that there's less people to do a bunch of chattering. Another way to look at it might be that our civilization gets knocked back to a pre-electronic state, and thus there would be less communication to provide that level of emotional connection that we're currently seeing. That's one level of it. Now, on the other side, having investigated the mathematics through Patrick Garrell's work and Morris Cottrell, I'm of the opinion that the Mayans are aware of a mega sunspot cycle, which we are currently seeing play out, and in fact, we're seeing a new prominence today. And one of the things that the Mayans and everybody else forecasts is that the sun will get to the point where it looks like an angry, the whole face of it is covered with angry snakes. And these could be a huge amount of prominences that build up due to the imbalance of the angular momentum versus the mass of the solar system. And here's what it boils down to. 98% of the mass is in the sun, but 99% of the angular momentum is in the planets. So like a human standing there with a rope and a weight on the end of the rope, as he spins around, his middle is going to want to go faster because that weight on the end of the rope is pulling it on the middle. And that builds up this magnetic tension in the sun that builds up over centuries until the point that it basically goes bluey, and I think we're getting close to the large expansion period. Our personal feeling here is that we'll see a whole series of these prominences, these filaments that creep in. Now, bear in mind, we had one of these filaments give way, and then the very next day, less than 24 hours later, was that quake in Chile. And that filament was very odd because most of these filaments, their lifespan is measured in 1 or 2 hours, and that one lasted 7 days. So these can potentially cause hyder flares and so on, but I'm not particularly worried about those so much as the idea that the sun might become so magnetically imbalanced that it has hundreds of these prominences going all at once, and that they all combine and collapse at once and then explode outward.
I assume, George, you've seen the graphics from ancient temples and so forth with the angry sun face.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, the angry sun phase is a real problem, and it's possible that something like a massive series of CMEs could cause problems like they did. I think it was 1859, wasn't it, Cliff?
Yeah.
And that's when we had the last real serious outburst, and that did things like, you know, set fence posts on fire because they had barbed wire, and the barbed wire picked up enough electricity that it could discharge and start fires that way. Imagine what that would do to infrastructure of the world.
Well, even beyond that, the concern for me is that when these prominences combine and collapse, they're actually exhibiting and expressing magnetism. And I think that the CMEs will be nasty, and NASA has every right to warn us about those, and everybody be aware you're going to have to maybe live in a post or pre-electric world, depending on how you want to look at it. But the big issue for me is the magnetic bubble that will accompany this, because as the prominences collapse, they'll expand outward, actually. They'll
Precise.
Bounce off the surface of the sun in a giant magnetic bubble that will push on our planet, and it'll push our magnetosphere around.
Well,
go ahead, George.
Well, in addition to that, we have grown to live on technology. Just imagine a planet where computers are down, ATMs are down, communications are down. People can't handle that.
Well, they're instantly, by the way, there would be nearly 4 million people that would die. And those are the people that are currently on the planet that are kept alive by life support machines of one form or another.
Yeah. Yeah, the backups go, everything goes.
Correct. And you're hungry while all this is going on.
Well, that's why we've always advocated at least storing up, stockpiling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You see, the real game for people has changed. When I was a kid, which was a very, very long time ago, the name of the game was work hard, get ahead, earn all you can, make all the money you can, and so forth. And the new paradigm that I've been living personally for the past 15 years is forget about getting ahead. Try to get yourself into the I can't lose position.
Now explain that.
Well, the I can't lose position is even if you have, like, we live in a double-wide modular home. In the south, they're called modular homes. In the north, they're called trailers. We live on a piece of out in the middle of nowhere land. We've got a well. We've got a garden. We've got goats. We've got, you know, ways of competency with a bow and arrow. That kind of stuff. I'm not saying, you know, be a nut job about it, but on the other hand, in a worst case situation, it's possible to, you know, to get.
Well, wait a second. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. You've kind of irritated me there, George, with the linguistics again. And this is one of the constant battles I have with my wife. Instead of worst case scenario, let's say when technology fails, because it's much more likely that that will occur than a worst case scenario.
Right. Right. Whatever the cause, I can still pump water by hand as long as the parts in the pump don't break and I don't need to get them from China.
Right. You may have to do a lot of pumping depending on how deep your well is.
And you've seen that China is about to become a net exporting country. And I mean, so the whole world is changing. And what causes us some real problems is trying to figure out, it's not if we keep blowing the balloon up, is it going to pop? The question is, which hand is it going to hurt most? Which finger is it going to hurt most?
And who will be ready when it happens?
Right. And most people don't see it coming. Most people stick their head in the sand and go, oh, you guys are just doomsayers. No, actually, we're very optimistic because we have plans. but there's a whole lot of people out there, George, who just don't want to deal with this.
No, I agree.
And unfortunately, they're going to be a big burden on all the coast-to-coast listeners who do know how to deal with this.
Who do know, that's right.
When it happens, they'll say, okay, George, what happened?
People will be knocking down their doors for water supplies and storable food and everything else.
Information. I think we'll be able to scavenge for some time. The idea that there's going to be an instant rush on those kind of things, I think actually what it will be food stores and then medicines. And so if you have the information on some of those, you can potentially say, well, look, guys, you know, you're much better off leaving me alone and heading towards this warehouse at this particular address. And by the way, I printed it off for you.
This small food shortage that you say we're going to have this year, it is just going to be what, the tip of the iceberg of what we can find
ahead?
It's
the completion of a trend. I'm sorry to say that since 1999, we've been tracking language around food shortages that is actually matched by examination of global grain productions. And so global grain production has fallen since 1999, and I think we crossed in 2005 or 2006, we actually crossed the barrier or the line where the amount of grain grown that year was not adequate, and we started getting into stores. And then by 2009, the global grain source on the planet had been severely depleted. So we're running real close to the edge.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take phone calls with George Ure and Cliff High on Coast to Coast AM.